My first impression of the place was the miserable road that you have to take to get there from the road to Muir Beach. You know, you turn up there, that, you know, terrible road. When I went off with Mary Summers, his wife, she hated motorcycles, so she said, I won't let you have a motorcycle. And that was at the time of my life when I'd let a woman say something like that, and I mean, follow it. Later on, for everybody after that, I said, I come with a motorcycle, take it or leave it.
Okay, today is June 25th, correct?
June 25th,
2018.
Right.
And who you've just heard describe the very place that we're about to talk to is Locke McCorkle, talking about his experiences at what would become known as Druid Heights. And that is the perfect opening, Locke, to our conversation. My name is Deborah Schwartz. I'm with the Mill Valley Historical Society, and I'm here on behalf of the Historical Society and also GGNRA. And I'm sitting here with the wonderful and incredible and unique and warm, wonderful man, Locke McCorkle. Locke, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day to tell me some stories and to share your stories with others about your experiences at Druid Heights and the people you knew and the road that you rode on with or without your motorcycle. And to describe a time in your history and others that is magical and still is, you know, at a time in a place where there was all kinds of individuals living together in a kind of interesting setting. So let's get back to the road into Druid Heights. When was the first time you rode any vehicle or even maybe on your own feet into Druid Heights?
Yeah, I never rode a motorcycle up there. That road was too bad. Uh-huh. And then when Roger bought my motorcycle, I thought, well, how's he going to do it? Well, he learned how. Because he didn't know how to ride when he bought my motorcycle.
What year are we here? What we're talking about? Was the first time that you went down that road?
Well, the year he bought my motorcycle was probably 57. Mm-hmm. So I probably went down the road, I don't know, 5 years before that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're in the 50s is when Roger Summers first was living there. Tell me about what you know about the space.
Well, what I know about it is a lot of things I know about it, Mary told me, mm-hmm. Mary Summers. Because she was Roger's wife when they bought the place. And the only way they were able to buy it was in partnership with Elsa Gidlow. I always thought of Elsa Gidlow and her African queen, this beautiful black lady that was her lover. So I don't think the African queen had a part in it, but Elsa did, mm-hmm. and she had enough money that the two of them together had enough for a down payment.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what they paid?
Mm-hmm. Haven't any idea. Mm-hmm. Compared to today's prices, it probably is ridiculous. You know?
Was Muir Woods still the destination? Was it just destination back then that it is today?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, that's just an off-beaten road. If you didn't know that it was there, you would never turn on it.
No.
You know, because it's not inviting, and it's long. Mm-hmm. Have you been up it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say, when I think of that road, the first image I have is of really intimidating potholes.
Yeah. And Roger would occasionally rent a Caterpillar tractor or something like that and run over it and kind of make it better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, then the winters, you just wreck it again, mm-hmm. and so forth. So I don't know that I remember much about the place, but maybe with your help, I'll get there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got the road. The memory of that road definitely is tattooed into your...
Yeah. I think I'll make my own recording.
Okay. How did you meet Roger and Mary?
You know, I don't remember.
Well, for those that may be listening to you talk about your life for the first time, I guess we should put in some contextual information. For example, that you lived on Montford Avenue.
Yeah.
In the 50s.
Yeah. I lived on I was living there on Montford Avenue. But it had all to do also with the fact that Roger was a designer and a carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not officially an architect, but he was an architect. And he made friends with Paul Hamilton, who lived over in Orinda, Paul and Rita. Paul was an architect, and they became very close friends. In fact, at Roger's memorial that happened right at the place there after he passed away, Paul Hamilton gave a talk and so forth.
And you were a builder yourself, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was interested, and they were very much Frank Lloyd Wright inspired. Mm-hmm. And so they turned me on to Frank Lloyd Wright and all that. And so it's very interesting because, that house that Roger built there was quite a trip. I once asked Paul Hamilton, the official architect, who was also superb, that would he ever hire Roger to build a house for him or build anything. He said, yeah, but about two-thirds through, he'd fire him because he doesn't stop. He just keeps architecturalizing it until it's too much.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, I haven't been in that house for years and years and years, but the kitchen used to have, I remember woodwork in it that you would never put in a kitchen. Uh-huh. It just was got more and more decorative.
And did you work on any of the houses there yourself?
Uh-uh.
Why did you go there to visit?
I think it was Elsa. Elsa Kedlow that introduced me to the place, because I think I met her at the American Academy of Asian Studies.
Where you were studying yourself?
Yeah.
And where you had met Alan Watts.
Right. Where I studied with Alan Watts.
Where you studied with Alan Watts.
Alan Watts and a whole lot of other fabulous originators of the Asian philosophy movement in the West, actually.
Were you living on Montford with your roommates who at that time when you met Elsa? Elsa, am I saying it correctly?
Elsa.
Who you were at that time? Because when you moved into your house,
I was married to Valerie.
Mm-hmm.
My starter marriage I was just up at a memorial for her because she passed away in November.
Mm-hmm.
They had me give they had me as one of the people that gave a talk, and I didn't know quite how to begin it or say it, but I'd read this thing on, I just finished reading the description of the wedding in England of the prince and the lady that's half black, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and the writer said, she dumped her starter husband, and I thought, That's it. She's my starter wife, and those are my starter kids.
But you weren't just living with your children there. You had other roommates.
Well, the other house, mm-hmm. that's where Gary Snyder lived, and later Jack Kerouac and Albert Saijo, and yeah.
So that you, because of the property, as I recall, had two rickety dwellings on them.
Yeah, right.
And your family all squished into one, and then your pals in another.
Yeah.
And then did Alan Watts live down the road, right?
He lived probably, it's not a city atmosphere, but probably about three blocks away, mm-hmm. around the corner.
So is that this time in your life in the 50s? That you went over to what would become Druid Heights. How did Druid Heights get its name?
I just think it came from Ilse because she was a poet. Mm-hmm. Pretty good one, too, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that was... But, you know, it... Because it got so... My relationship with Mary became... very intense, but that was out of an acting, a very unusual and unique acting class we took in San Francisco.
So let's get things in order. So
but
you,
that's a little later.
Yeah. So this is the early 50s, you said 52?
Probably
when Elsa and Roger Summers.
Well, because... when I think of it, I got out of high school in 48, graduated in 52, and that's when I was going to the University of California to be a professor, and I heard Alan Watts on the radio and turned around and did something entirely different.
Went
took
over
a
to the
180 turn and went to the... what did I call it? I don't know the name of it. American Academy of Asian Studies.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then where you studied with Alan Watts as your teacher.
Right.
And Gary Snyder was studying with you too, correct?
Yep.
So all of a sudden you go from San Francisco, well, you're Berkeley, then San Francisco, now you're in Mill Valley and you're living with your friends on the property. Alan Watts is your teacher's living down the street. And Elsa and Roger Summers are at Druid Heights, not too far, a few miles away.
Yeah.
If you knew where to take a left.
Right. Yes.
And what was it like there at Druid Heights? What were, as you, did you watch the first buildings go up?
A little bit, yeah. It seems to me there was an existing building that Elsa and her friend lived in.
Mm-hmm. The Amazon Queen. Do you remember her name?
African Queen.
Oh,
no.
African Queen.
The African Queen. No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. I remember her looks. She was not the real skinny types that are so popular now. But she wasn't like Aunt Jemima either. She was just a beautiful, full-fleshed human being, you know, just gorgeous. And, and Elsa herself was kind of the opposite. She was very quiet. And
what was she like physically?
I don't remember. Well, I can kind of see her. I wouldn't call her pretty, but she was interesting looking because she was an interesting person. You know, mm-hmm. she developed her character. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the buildings go up, and I was, you know, mostly I came out there to a party or two, because I. Temperamentally, I did not like to be around Roger. He was he was a bit messianic, I thought. He thought he knew what life was all about, and he wanted you to do it his way. And he dominated the conversation and the interactions in such a way. And the other thing is, he didn't believe in disciplining his children at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a big wake-up for this number one son when he came to live with me, because I didn't go for it at all.
So on the property, there's Elsa and her lover, there's Roger and his family, including Mary.
Roger, Mary, Geraldine, and Tagore.
And those are their children.
That's the children.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, so you didn't, but I've heard about these parties. Tell me about the parties.
Well, the one I remember the most, and I'd like to tell a story from that Mary told me way back to set this up. When she was 8 years old, living in Florida, she heard that a woman made it either on her beauty or her character, and said she stood in front of a full-length mirror for the longest time, looking herself over, and then she concluded, "Mary, you better develop your character." And it was true. She had a belly that kind of stuck out, and knobby knees and elbows, and she wouldn't go by your standard of a beautiful woman at all, but she developed her character in such a way. I remember in this party, I was just sitting there, and most everybody was there already, and then Mary walks in with a female companion, and they're in conversation, and she just lets out this, she says, "But I'm frigid." And of course, every man that hears an attractive woman say she's frigid, you think, "Well, not with me, you wouldn't be."
Here's the challenge.
Right, and I am sure she knew that, because she was nobody's dumbbell. And I will tell you, she walked in the room, and I don't know how many other people heard that, but all eyes turned to her, because you would. She had... David Hunter, the guy that taught us in acting, called it brain radiation, but you might call it just charisma. What Jack Kennedy, our president, had, you know.
A magnetic personality.
Yeah. And what our acting teacher said, these people, if you have them on a stage, whether they can act or not, people are going to look at them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you happen to, a movie star is somebody who has that and can act. And if they can really act, like Meryl Streep, then you have a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure people listening or hearing this have seen Meryl Streep in movies, and every movie you see her in, it's somebody entirely different, because she's so...
But you cannot take your eyes off of her.
No.
Mary was like that.
Mary was like that, yeah. And then there was, the thing was... It was funny that Mary was raised in the South by Southern parents in Florida. That didn't have the slightest idea how to cook food. They overcooked everything. Vegetables were just boiled out of all recognition. And so she didn't eat them, and her health was awful. And she discovered, when she was living out there at Druid Heights, she discovered being a vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
She raised the two children as vegetarians. She just had fresh fruit and vegetables around all the time, and they just ate when they were hungry. She didn't have to cook. She never learned to cook. It was quite a thing. Tagore was I think, 10 years old before he had any meat. He was visiting his grandpa in Florida, and his grandpa gave him a slice of bacon, and he loved it.
So you would go over to at this party when you first saw Mary, and you're describing Roger as kind of the conductor of the day or the party or whatever, yeah. And in comes Mary.
Right.
And what was the party like? Take us back in time. We're walking into the space. Give us the ambiance. You know, those parties were different back then, I suspect.
I don't know. Everybody was, I don't know how they are now, because I don't like parties and I don't go to them. I like real conversations, and usually you can't get them in a party.
Mm-hmm.
You just get little snippets, unless you go off with somebody, you know, which is kind of anti-party. I remember everybody kind of sitting around, and she, you know, I don't remember them doing a lot. It was mostly talk.
How about refreshments? Alcohol, pot, what?
Not much in the way of pot. Alcohol, we all drank what we called Dago Red. In those days, you could get a gallon of cheap red wine for a couple of bucks, and you ended up with the most god-awful headache the next day. But you did get high. And even drunk if you drink enough of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how the memories of the taste of that awful wine can stick with you.
Yes. It was really blank, but I don't remember dancing like we did at my house.
You mean naked dancing parties, but, like you described in your interview?
I don't remember with their clothes on. We had the naked ones at my house. But and we did that sober.
So you've seen Mary, and you're at Druid Heights. How about the surrounding? What's the visually look?
Oh, visually it was like I loved the land, and there was a lot of grassy area.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that, and I don't remember whether they grew vegetables or not. They probably did, because when I think about the brains of the whole situation, I think of Elsa, because I think she had more common sense than Roger and Mary put together, and that she was. I think actually she put in more money than they did too, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But something like that.
So this acting class, where you and Mary became more than just people that you say hi to at a party.
Yeah, that was incredible. This was and Roger came to that class, and so did Paul Hamilton, who was very active in Druid Heights, and also this guy David Hunter taught acting in the San Francisco City Schools Adult Education Division in the evenings.
Mm-hmm.
But what he taught was so different. I've never seen it done any place since, although I did meet some professional actors who had studied with him, and I asked them about it, and they said, we love it more than anything you can imagine, but we can't use it because the context for it doesn't exist. He had you, and this is what got us so involved, I think, he had us concentrate on the sensory level of everything. At first, he had you just listen to sounds with your eyes closed and not even identifying with them, just letting them come and go. And then eventually he would have you lift the lids a little and then just kind of see things. And when you did the, when you actually did a play, you didn't interpret the characters. You just let the words dribble out of your mouth while you concentrated on this until, if he liked the way it came out, he'd say, "Set that," and that might be three words or 10 words, and he'd want you to do those there every time, but you were all, it was an incredibly deep awareness, and then eventually you got in movement. He would ask you, in fact, the first chapter of my book on how to make love, I got all that from him, and that's what I, if the readers of that book got nothing but the first chapter, they would have got it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, that's when Alan Watts would send people over to me because of that, because he knew.
After you wrote your book, you had when you brought that way of being in the world into your...
Well, I brought the way of being in the world before I wrote the book. David Hunter, the guy that created it all, quit. He'd gone to India, and the masters in India said, "You will die if you keep doing this. It's too much for them, for us over here," and so forth. So he quit, and after he quit, I asked him. There were times when he would be sick, or for some reason he didn't show up for the class. I was good at teaching it. I would just do what he did,
mm-hmm.
and everybody would just fall in, and that. So when he quit entirely, Rex Rathbun and I rented a studio in San Francisco, and we tried to recreate that on our own.
What compelled all of you to take acting class in the first place?
It's just that because of how, I think Elsa Gidlow was the one that picked up on it first. She said, "This is a really different thing. You should try it."
Had she been in the classes as well?
She must have, but mm-hmm. she wasn't still doing it when I went.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary went, and even my starter wife Valerie went, but not much. But Mary had been an actress and studied acting and so forth. And in fact, that's when she grew up in the South, and she had a Southern accent, and she didn't want it. She went to New York, and she got trained into what she calls the Mid-Atlantic accent, neither British nor American, kind of in between.
Yes, there was a time when almost all of movies have that.
That's right.
Can you reproduce that, the way she would say things?
No, I can't.
But it is really like, "That's not American, but that's not British."
Right. But it's really clear.
Yes.
You get it. And of course, in my interest in Buddhism and Hinduism, the idea of altered states of consciousness, and of course, the use of marijuana, even though the marijuana we had in those days didn't give you such an altered consciousness like Mark's wife Tia says. She says, "Back then, you smoked a whole joint, held your breath as long as you could, and you got a bit of a buzz."
And then Tina being Mark Watts, son of Alan Watts's.
Right, right.
This is Mark's wife.
Yeah.
Yes, that's, and it was also $10 a lid.
That's right. And the lid was
so affordable.
Was Prince Albert, a Prince Albert smoking tobacco can.
Yes.
Full, with seeds.
I remember.
And Tia said, and now you take one toke and you see God. So, I thought, oh, and my brother went too.
Your brother, what's his name?
My brother, Bob. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. And then eventually we got, we went from just listening to this seeing, and then in moving, he would have you, you'd have, you know, wherever your hand was, he'd say, become aware of your hand. Now, what would be involved if that were to come up and move? Would the fingers be willing? Is the arm willing? Are you willing? And a lot of that, because he would ask a lot of questions while you're listening. He'd say, how much of you is listening? How much of you is not listening? He wouldn't want you to answer it. He just said, let those sounds be part of the sounds. And then we got into touch. And I remember that was with it. Mary and I were touching each other. And it was an incredible experience. It was like, it wasn't like ordinary touching. It was because we were totally involved with it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't sexual, but it was intense. You know, to make it sexual, you almost have to diminish it a bit. You know, because it was so strong. And that was like, what was this? Because I hadn't thought of her in any kind of romantic way. She was just Roger's wife, just like lots of other people have other wives, and I already had one whom I loved a lot. And that was just fine with me. And the other thing I remember about the parties out there, that they let the kids run loose, and Tagore, he would just, because he had no boundaries, because his Roger wouldn't teach him any, he'd get up on your lap and stick his thumbs in your eyes or anything. He was looking for somebody to say, hey, there's a limit. It's like art. If it isn't art if you don't have a frame. If you don't have edges, you can't make it art. It's just everything. And I thought that was no way to raise a child, because I had been raised entirely different. My parents weren't strict, but they taught my brother Bob and I both to not pick up stuff on people's tables and stuff like that. My mother
simple would teach social me. Boundaries.
Yeah, she'd say,
"Where's Mary in all of this?"
I guess she just let him do that, because I remember when she moved in with me, with Tagore, I remember Tagore had his toy and he put it on this low table I had that was wood, and he wound it up and the wood amplified the sound, and it was really, really loud. And I looked at him and I said, don't do that. And he looked at me and did it again. But he never did that anymore. The next thing he knew, he was rolling across the floor, and Mary was horrified that I had used my hand on him. But I don't think he was, because he and I have been friends from then on, you know, and I never had to do anything else. I never had to spank him or anything like that. It was just, once he got, once he got the message, then he just followed me, and you know, and I taught him how to sail, and I taught him how to hike through the High Sierra Mountains and camp out and all that stuff, and he learned it great. And in fact, he just called me on Father's Day and said, "You're as much a father as anybody I ever had."
Awfully sweet.
Yeah.
Somewhere between the Electric Touch and moving in together, there had to have been a transition. And because I've interviewed a few people about Druid Heights, and with in the telling of the story of Roger Summer, who's become quite a character in this tale of Druid Heights,
it's a famous character.
A succession of women. There's, you know, Roger and his women. I know
Barbara and.
So.
But I don't know that he. Well, Roger had his attitude towards his wife was, don't take her away, but anything else is okay. Which I thought was, actually, I'm kind of that way myself. I am not jealous. I'm not jealous, but I wouldn't want somebody to take my wife away.
So did she take herself away? I mean, she left.
Yeah.
And moved in with you.
Yeah. 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 What? That was a big deal, and that really surprised me. Not only moved in with me, sold her ex my motorcycle. I remember the $250 he gave me for the motorcycle. I bought this Buddhist sculpture I'd been seeing in Chinatown for a considerable amount of time, and that's how much the guy wanted for it.
And that's how much you wanted for your motorcycle.
Right, because it was a trade. It was okay with me in those days. I wasn't an addict like I am now. I mean, I'm an addict without a motorcycle, but
yeah.
I'm still the addict.
Yes. Because now it's been a couple of years since you've given up motorcycle riding, hasn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
But before that, you were, like, I think when I interviewed you a few years ago, you were on your way to a five-country motorcycle tour in Europe.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And speed racing at speeds of up to, how fast did you go?
Me personally, I don't think I ever went over 140, because I only did on racetracks, and the racetrack I used was Laguna Seca, and you can't get going a heck of a lot faster than that before you have to turn.
Mm-hmm. So what age were you when you gave up motorcycle racing? Riding?
85. Yeah, because I just got some signals that maybe my reactions wouldn't be adequate
mm-hmm.
or quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'd been all right on the racetrack, but the rough part was riding with my rascally friends in the mountains around here. Because that was tricky, because there's other cars and God knows what all,
mm-hmm.
and you're in and out, and the people think you're racing, you're not. You're just going fast. You know. Because we pretty much kept the order of who's first and who's second, third, fourth, and fifth. So we weren't racing each other.
How did Roger take Mary leaving?
I don't know.
How did How about your wife?
Oh, that was pretty awful. Because it wasn't, she and I did not separate because of Mary. We separated because I realized I was headed in a different direction than she was. It was just that simple, and I would never leave the way I did now because I thought it was a little bit too brutal. But I did set it up. I got good at the I Ching, the Book of Changes, mm-hmm. and I did it with all the sticks and stuff like that instead of just the coins. And I sat down with my wife Valerie, and the guy I wanted her to go off with, Bob McKee, whom I'd known for years and years and years, and who'd been in love with her for years and years and years, who had a great piece of land up north, and he wanted, you know, I had three children, and he wanted the three, and he'd had a starter wife before too, and a couple of kids by her, but he was single then, and he was happy to take the children, and you know, which was great. I didn't have to pay alimony or child support or any of that stuff. But, you know, and later on, Simone is the wife I have now.
Number
five.
Five, yes.
And she said, I think your daughter Tasha is angry about that. And so I went out to a beach once with Tasha, and I said, well, let's talk about it. And she was. Mm-hmm. And I just said, well, I wouldn't do it that way again, Tasha, and I apologize. And she took it. Mm-hmm. And more than that, I mean, I'm an accepted member of that whole community up there, of my first children and their grandchildren and so forth.
Did you stop going to Druid Heights once you started living with Mary?
Oh yeah, I never went back. You know, I can't remember ever going back. Oh.
And what year was that?
I think 57. Mm-hmm. And shortly after that, we went. We lived in San Francisco.
You left your place in Montfort.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I forget who I left that with. It was somebody, because I had this. Yeah, you remember this 5-year lease for $25
right.
a month.
Right.
Two houses and 2 acres of land in trees.
Yeah.
It was something else. Yeah, we lived on a place by the first 49ers stadium, which was in San Francisco. Not Candlestick Park, but mm-hmm. I forget what it was called. Something Field. And then Pacific Heights. And then eventually she says, I want to get completely away. And I want to get the kids away from Roger. So that's when we took off and ended up in Tucson, Arizona.
Why did she want to get the kids away from Roger?
I think she thought that that it wasn't a good mix to have him, he being completely free with him, mm-hmm. and when she was with me, it wasn't. I don't really know, because Geraldine never liked it, but she considered Geraldine, the daughter, she considered that I broke up her family.
Mm-hmm.
And she hates me to this day.
Mm-hmm.
but her brother loves me. It's just different. Mm. He doesn't see it like she did.
Who's older?
Huh?
Who's older of the two children?
The girl.
Yeah.
She later became a doctor. And I don't know what she does now, because if he's 65 this year, or this year or last year, and his sister was older, so she's up there.
People, there's a lot of attention lately about Druid Heights because Alan Watts moved there, your friend and teacher.
Yeah.
And you know, just I think there's an interest in the place, partially because it's sort of got that scavenge yet nature yet creative sort of ambiance.
Yeah.
And then the array of interesting people that came and went, including Alan Watts. What do you think should happen to the spot, you know, the place? It's getting older. The forest continues to do its work.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't
do maintenance.
If you don't do maintenance, it goes down. I know this with my starter wife and her family. When they're through with the car, it just sits out there under the trees and gradually melts down. It takes a long time, but it gradually goes back to the dust from whence it sprang, like the old people used to say. It's fun. What do I think should happen to them? I guess there is a lot of attention to the place because of Alan Watts, but I never thought of his presence out there as being much. To me, the big thing was Roger himself, because he was quite a character, and people were attracted to him from all over the place. He did all right. He just, Barbara was also in the acting class.
Barbara.
And
she is?
Huh?
Barbara is who?
Barbara, I think, it was the next woman that Roger had after Mary.
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't remember whether they married or not. But it was before, what's her name? Mary Jane. Is that her name?
Of the women?
Yeah, no, of Alan's wives.
I don't know Alan's wives.
Oh. Yeah, because
he had an array as well?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, actually, now that it's coming back to me, the last one was Mary something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she didn't like the children at all, but she got included in the will, and DeGores had to deal with her because they had some property. They bought some property in Ukiah.
And this is Barbara or Alan's wives. You're talking about Barbara. The children didn't like Barbara. Roger's second wife.
No. It's DeGore didn't much like Mary Jane.
Oh, Mary Alan's, Jane. Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yes.
Roger's final wife.
Alan's final wife. Or is it Roger's? I'm confused.
Roger's.
Okay, Roger. Okay.
Roger's.
Yes.
They may have both had, they can't both have had the same names.
You know, I've got a list somewhere of the lineage. I'm sorry I didn't bring it with me. It's hard to keep up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've gotten very bad at names anyway. I never was good at them, but I've gotten worse. Sometimes I can't remember somebody that lives around this corner.
I saw Wavy Gravy the other day at an event in Tete from the Grateful Dead, and he had a
a little button on his shirt that says, "It's okay, I can't remember my name either."
I'm going to get one.
In any case, so Roger went on to Barbara and on to others, and you never went back. But the notoriety of the place lives on. And
oh, yeah. I was aware of that, and that was okay. But then my interest, I was interested in what, I guess when I look back on it, I was interested, always interested in being really happy. And that's what I was looking in the Eastern religions for. I wasn't looking to be saved, whatever that is. I'm such a heretic. The idea that Christ died for our sins, I don't even think we have any sins. And if we did, I certainly wouldn't expect somebody else to take the rap, even Jesus. And my respect for Jesus is way beyond him doing a stunt like that. I think he was a great guy. And I don't think he'd do anything stupid. And I'm not even sure he died on that cross, because he didn't have to. He was a very evolved being. And actually, I just read something by Gary Larson, whose angels were there in a lifetime when Jesus was crucified, and they said he didn't. Mm. He didn't die. And the guys down below that were that had him nailed up there said, "Why aren't you crying out in pain?" And he just smiled at him. And so the guy took the spear and jammed it right up his ribs and stuff like that, and he just smiled again. But the story is a good one for the church, but it doesn't make any sense to me.
You make an important point here, the story, because some events, the stories kind of can get away from what actually happened, yeah. Which is why I'm interviewing you today about Druid Heights and the people that lived there, and the driving force behind the space and the kind of world that it was then. And I noticed that Roger's name comes up again and again and again as this incredible force. Mm-hmm. And Alan Watts as well, amazing guy, someone that changed your life.
Yeah.
And so there were in time imprinted in that physical space and still with the remnants of the buildings that are there, the echoes of what happened there once, and the help to remind us of the kind of people that live there and what it is to be happy and to live and to feel and to touch and all the things that you were experiencing at that mm-hmm. time in your acting class and in the philosophy of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And but time has gone on and the buildings remain in their state of repair or disrepair. I'm still waiting to hear what you think should happen.
I would just let them go back to nature, like you mentioned both earlier. It would just, there's another involvement too. Roger was great friends with Sandy Jacobs, and he was there a lot. And that was my fourth wife, Sumi Ray, who is Mark's
mother.
Mother.
And Mark's, for those that don't know, Mark is the man...
No, not Mark's mother. Mark's...
Stepmother, is it?
Mother-in-law.
No, his wife's
mother. Mother-in-law.
Yes, mother-in-law. So Mark Watts is the son of Alan Watts.
Right.
Who was with his father, close to his father, collaborating with his father, up until his father's death, when Mark was just not very old.
No, he wasn't.
And so you were involved with Mark's wife's mother, who was with
Sandy Jacobs, who was with Roger Summers out there in Druid Heights.
You had two of Roger's women.
Well, Roger wanted, Sumire said, he always wanted to sleep with me. But, and I don't know whether she did or not, she didn't say she did.
But Roger said that? So you were still
friends? No, she told me that he told her that.
Oh.
That he propositioned her or something like that. As I said, I wasn't jealous. I'm not jealous, so I wouldn't. It wouldn't have been a problem as far as I was concerned. But we were kind of much beyond that stage by then.
Yeah, there's. You hear about the wild switching days of, but this is, it's a little hard to keep up.
Right. Let's see. My third wife was about the only one that didn't know anything about all this. She came from a completely different background.
Looking back into those times and the people, what's your takeaway from it?
God bless them. I think they were having an adventure, all of them. Elsa and the African Queen and Roger and Barbara and Mary and everybody, as far as I'm concerned.
And you.
Yeah, and me. But then, you know, at the same time, I had this, I was all mixed up with these beat writers, mm-hmm. which they weren't. And then when I said I wanted to be happy, I never got from either Roger Summers or Sandy Jacobs any sense that they got the depth of Hindu psychology or Buddhist psychology. I call them psychology because they're more psychologies than they are religions.
Did they appreciate the teachings of Alan Watts? Did they understand who he was in his philosophy?
Echoed the words and they could talk about it, but I didn't get that it actually affected how they were as people. It just sounded like they had the words right. Mm-hmm. I know Mary would read a book and then she'd tell Roger about it, and then Roger would expound to everybody on the book.
He seems incorrigible.
And he didn't even read it. But he liked to be the star. But, as I said, I just backed off of it. I know when I went to the memorial, which was out there, actually.
Well, how did Roger Summers die?
I think it was a heart attack.
How old? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but I remember the last time Tagore and I were together, I'd asked him, and I think it was, the name that comes to me is 72, or maybe. Mm-hmm. But he might not even have made it that long, and Alan Watts didn't make it that far. But then he drank like a fish. And I think he kept drinking that and smoked like a chimney, right? I think he kept drinking that same cheap red wine that I'd given up a long time ago.
Just a liver in revolt.
As far as I'm concerned, he's a 16-foot Buddha. He really knew what he was talking about. Mm.
Is there anything today like that time that you experience?
No, it's gone.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to close this interview with?
No, I think that's... I think I've said enough. It's just, you know, I didn't spend a lot of time there, and so my impressions are mostly of the beginnings of it. And I didn't spend any time with Alan Watts after he'd moved out there.
It's where he died.
Yeah. And I didn't spend much time with him when he lived on the houseboats in Sausalito either. You know, I mean, like I would go and I would study one thing until I got it as far as I could get it, and then I'd go on to the next. And by that time, I had a Buddhist teacher in San Francisco that I was studying privately with, and that was very interesting to me, too.
If you could say anything to Roger Sommer now, what would you say? With all these years later.
Slow down.
How about to Alan Watts?
No. I think he was just fine. I'm sorry he didn't take care of his health better, but I think I actually said this before. But
in your interview, yeah.
Yeah.
He'd show up with a big cup of coffee and right, a sweet roll.
Right, right. And I'd be eating yogurt. And
and here you are, coming close to 90 now, right?
88.
88, yeah.
Yeah.
Looking great, by the way.
Well, thank you.
How about Mary?
Well,
would you say anything to her?
Just, I love you.
And Valerie?
I love you. I never stopped loving any of my wives one single bit. I just was someplace else. You know, it never made any sense to me why anybody would do that. Why would you decide to hate the person you divorced from? What's the big deal? I mean, marriage is a social contract. It isn't spiritual.
Mm-hmm. How about, do you ever feel compelled to go to Druid Heights to see the buildings? Go see Ed Stiles? Did you know him?
I didn't really know him very much. I met him, but... you know, if he could walk by me on the street right now, and I wouldn't know who it was.
Would you like to go say hi?
Yeah, I think I kind of would.
Okay. Hey, well, let's close with that idea. Let's go say hi to Ed and Marilyn. I'll drive us down the road.
Cool. And take a look at that place.
Yeah.
Now that, I think I would really like that, because all that is water over the bridge now. You know, or under the bridge, whichever way it goes. And, you know, as far as I know, there's no hard feelings between anybody, any place.
Okay, well, it's a deal.
It's a deal. Let's do it.
Thank you so much for this interview, Locke. Always a pleasure seeing you. Always a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
And I always learn something.
Oh, I hope so. That was great, because I didn't... That's why, like I said on the phone before you came, maybe I don't know enough. Because I...
Well, you know you don't know everything. Yeah. That's a good place to start.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, that concludes this interview. And on behalf of the Mill Valley Historical Society and GGNRA, we will say that's a wrap.